that smile again.
Show me that smile.
Don't waste another minute on your crying. We're nowhere near the end.
We're nowhere near the best is ready to begin.
Oh, as long as we got each other, we got the world spinning right in our hands, baby, you and me.
We gotta be the luckiest dreamers who ever quit dreaming.
As long as we keep on giving, we can take anything that comes our way. Maybe rain or shine all the time. We got each other sharing the laughter and love.
Another exciting edition of the Chicago Bullseye. I am your host, Mark Lewenthal, and with me as always is El Doctor, El Professor, Fred Pfeiffer. Talk to me, Fred.
Mark, how are you doing, brother? Good to get caught up. It's been a while since our last, you and I were, you know, talking Bulls on the show. We had two interviews that just posted a few days ago with, you know, Brian Crawford and Doug Tolan. Did you get a chance to listen to those?
I have not yet, but I will. Thank you for telling me that they're up. Right?
Yeah.
Now I'll go check them out.
Brilliant stuff. And really intelligent guys. You know, I don't know about you, but I get the sense that in general, it's just the sky is falling with the fan base. I don't know if you get that sense. I'm a little bit more positive than that. I think we still have a lot of time to, you know, turn this around. But it's pretty dark out there. Dark clouds out there. I don't know how you feel.
Well, I mean, okay, so do you want me to tell you what I think the fan base is feeling or what I'm feeling?
Well, both. Let's hear what your general opinion.
Well, I feel like I probably am in the corner with the majority of the fan base. I mean, look, it's the beginning of February right now. I don't think that we're quite at the panic button mode yet. I mean, but we're getting there. We're very close. I mean, you have the trade deadline coming up in, what, 2-3 weeks, something like that? And if this team continues to play like this, something has to be done because our window for success is low, is going to be very short. I mean, we have an old team to begin with. We have a lot of injuries that have happened over the years. And our best player right now, Pau Gasol, is, you know, 34. So, I mean, you know, everyone on this team is pretty old. The window's going to be small. So if you think this is the best chance to win a title, and I do, this time, you've been saying for years that we might have had the best chance this year, that year, with Ry Rose to play, yada, 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 and I never bought it. This year we do. And we're only going to get so many of these chances. If within the next 2 or 3 weeks we don't start turning things around, either you got to make a big trade or you got to get rid of the coach, because I think that a lot of it is – I have a lot of issues with what's going on right now, but we can't just sit pat and watch this thing go fall apart. I mean, if by March they're not playing top-tier basketball, when you look at teams like the Atlanta Hawks and the Cleveland Cavaliers that are playing so well – Cleveland's on a 12-game winning streak right now – how do you think we're ever going to be able to compete with those teams when right now we're getting schlocked by everyone? I mean, what are we going to turn on and turn around? There's so much more. Everybody tries to say Mike Dunleavy's the reason because our, you know, these losses kind of coincide with when he went down, but it's more than just Mike Dunleavy. There's a lot that's wrong with this team right now. Our defense is atrocious. The shooting overall is not very good. I'm still extremely ridiculously upset with Derrick Rose's shot selection. I mean, I'm losing my mind. I'm losing my mind. I don't understand what it's going to take for this guy to be taking decent shots consistently through a game, and or what it's going to take for this team to move the ball. I mean, offensively, we have a good offensive team, so they can kind of create on their own, even if they're playing isolation half the damn time. They can still kind of make their own things happen. But if this team was moving the ball and creating for each other, we'd be a lot better, a lot more fluid offensively. And, I mean, right now you see we get into – you know, we'll play decently for a stretch. We did against Houston, and we looked really good coming out of the gate. And then all of a sudden, by the end of the first quarter, middle of the second quarter, we fell apart. I mean, defensively we just were a complete mess, especially in transition. And you just started seeing us go in isolation on play after play after play after play, just predictable offense. This team is a lot better than the team that we're seeing out there right now, talent-wise. So somebody has to be accountable for this right now. We are in a downswing. Okay. Things have to change.
Let me just jump in. You touched on a lot of topics there. Number one, I'm not the biggest Tibbs. Obviously, you know, I'm not the biggest Tibbs fan in the world. I think there's a lot of issues going on with him and his coaching and minutes. And, you know, I talked about that ad nauseum in a previous podcast. But I think it's insane to think you should fire him during the season. You let him finish out the year, and we see where we go. You cannot fire him now or during the regular season, number one. So I disagree with you, your statement there. I don't care how bad it gets. You let him finish this out, and we'll see where we're at after the season's over. If we don't, if we lose again in the first round, I have no problem with saying an adios. I have no – I mean, we've touched on this before, but 17-22 in the playoffs, I know there's been injuries. I think he's partly responsible for them. And, you know, it's just not good enough. You know, he's a rich man, Scott Skiles. I think it's entirely possible he's a rich man, Scott Skiles. All right, that said, as far as, like, making trades or acquiring somebody, I keep on hearing this talk, you know, let's bring somebody in, let's do something. Marco Bellinelli's a pretty smart player. It took him, what, three months to figure out the system? This is a guy. This is a coaching staff that, unless you've been exposed to the defense before, it takes you a long time to understand it. Look at how the rookies struggle. It's not just because they're dumb. It's not just because they're rookies. It's because it's a complicated defensive system. It takes a while for you to mesh and to actually get it going. I don't think there's anybody you can acquire and bring in here and expect, oh, suddenly we're going to get better. I think that's insane. You know,
yeah, but so, how can you say that our look, every single year we've had as many new players as we have this year. It's not like this is some dramatic overhaul of a team. The majority of the team is the same guys that have been here for the last few years. And, I mean, and even Rose, you know, I mean, he's played in the pro system before. Over the last two seasons, he was on the bench. Wait, hang on one second, just one second. Every single year, Fred, the last 2 years, we brought in new players every single year, and by this point of the season, the defense was clicking no matter who we brought in, whether it was Bellinelli, whether it was Dunleavy last year, whatever it was. We figured it out. And this year, in our starting lineup, who's new in our starting lineup? It's just Pau Gasol.
No, but you're just proving my point. It's not true. Starting lineup was Gasol, but in off the bench, we have a number of new guys. You know, Aaron Brooks, obviously, Nico. I mean, there's a couple of new key players. But you just proved my point. Yeah, at this point of the year, 3 months after, you know, the start of the season, we usually start clicking. Anybody we acquire now is not going to provide an immediate impact. It's going to take them a while to get adjusted to the system, and that's just a fact. That's why we haven't really made any major trades in the year since Tibbs has been coached, because anybody you bring in, it's going to take them a while unless they've been exposed to the system before. So, I mean, a guy like Ray Allen, sure. Yeah, that guy's played for Tibbs, and he knows the system. But
why would he want to play here? Why would he want to play here? A month ago, I could understand why he'd want to come here. Want to come here now?
I think it's clear we need some three-point shooting, and he would fit right in. He doesn't want to play, give McDermott a chance, so why not look at Ray? I think Ray Allen would tremendously help the team right now.
I agree with you. He would tremendously help us. I just don't understand why he would come here. I just don't. At this point, we don't look like a contender, so I don't know why he would come here.
I disagree with that. To some extent, I still think we are. I mean, we still think we have the talent. We're just not playing well right now. This happens not, and it's not at a level I expect it to be, this, you know, this bad. But, you know, looking at the team overall, 30-20 still, 17-9 on the road, which is one of the better records in the NBA on the road, but 13-11 at home. We just got to get better at home. We just got to get better overall, and I still think we can do it. I mean, it's not like this team is without talent. You have great players on this team. Gasol's an all-star. He's played, I think, phenomenally. His minutes need to come down, but overall he's been great on the offensive end. Obviously he has issues on the defensive end, but those are adjustments that need to be made by the coach, and, you know, I have faith that eventually he'll do that. His minutes absolutely need to come down. Taj and, I mean, Noah is just not the same guy. I don't understand why it seems like so hard for the fan base to understand this, but last year he was the defensive player of the year. He was the best defender in basketball, and his strength was being able to guard anyone. It's so funny to me that I understand he's not playing out of position. He's guarding the four. Yeah, he's guarding the four, and he's getting torched by guys like Jordan Hill. He's been consistently beat up this year. I mean,
on that particular game, Hill was making some very hard shots at the end of that game. I'm not going to blame anybody for what Jordan Hill did to us in that specific game. Now, I'll blame people for the reason why we were down by so many points and we had to come back at the end of that game, but Jordan Hill went off in overtime. That's not Joakim Noah's fault.
Hold on a second, Mark. I brought this up before. Everything's, again, the narrative on the previous podcast is Gasol is the entire reason why the defense has gone sour. I point to early this year where Gasol missed three games where we went 1-2 and we lost to Sacramento, and Cousins just thoroughly and utterly dominated our quote-unquote defensive front court of Taj and Noah. So if you think that's the reason that it's all – my point I'm just trying to say is Boozer was replaced by Paul Gasol. Paul Gasol now has 102 blocks. In Boozer's 4 years with the Chicago Bulls, his total for those 4 years was 92 blocks. Gasol in 1 year, I mean less than a full season, has already blocked more shots than Boozer did. Now, everybody wants to act like, you know, there's no value in that, or, you know, apparently these guys are just driving and throwing the ball into his chest. Whatever, there's still value in block shots. He's an upgrade on Boozer. That's my point. That spot has been an upgrade. Now, it's up to the Bulls to figure out, and I feel this way, I think it should be, now if you want to fix the issue, start Taj and put Noah off the bench. Have Gasol at the five, and have Gasol play whatever, the four or the five, whoever is the weaker shooter. And then you can do a lot more defensively because he doesn't have to come out on that guy. That's what the easy fix to this problem is. You saw it in the last game against the Rockets. Bulls are getting destroyed, end of the third quarter. Taj comes in, Gasol and Taj lead a 14-4 run, cuts the lead to 75-70. Gasol sits, and we start the fourth with the lineup everybody's been crying for. Noah at his customary five, Taj at the four. You have Heinrich, great defender, and Butler, great defender on the perimeter. And what happens? The Rockets go on a 13-0 run, and it's a layup line. So that's been happening all year. Taj and Noah have been terrible. It just drives me crazy every time I read these people who are just saying it's all Gasol. It's the problem is that Noah is not the player he was. I'm hoping he gets there.
He's been pretty good, though, the last few games.
The more
he's
active, he hasn't
good.
Been great. No, the Rockets game, he was not good in the fourth quarter. The quarter that mattered, he was terrible. It was a layup line. I mean, go rewatch that fourth quarter. It was a joke. And people forget, I mean, how we ended the season, the previous season. Noah has problems with bigger fours and fives. He just does. Boogie Cousins earlier this year totally dominated him. He was dominated by the Washington front court in the playoffs last year. Yes, I know he wasn't 100% healthy. He's always going back to 2009 when he had major problems with the Boston front court with Perkins and Big Baby. He just has problems with size. Gasol's the perfect guy to bring in, and then he's not a great defender, but at least he can do just as well with big guys down low. I'm just, in a way, I kind of wish that Gasol sat for like 2 weeks so we could really see the true horror of what would happen, which is exactly what happened in the Sacramento game earlier this year. We'd score about 85 points, and our offense would just fall apart, basically, because right now, there's no one that – let me go back to the offensive end. This is really important. I encourage you all to look for this. Tibbs is using Gasol as a stretch five. He has to be on the perimeter because I hope this is his reasoning, because Noah's man is no longer leaving the paint. Go watch the Bulls game and watch who's ever guarding Noah and count how many times he leaves the paint. He doesn't leave the paint. That big guy stays in there, and he doesn't have to come out on Noah because no one respects his jump shot. And you can pick and roll with Rose all day at the top of the key. The big man's going to be at the free throw line. There's going to be no room for Rose to drive. This happens over and over and over again, yet we still run that pick and roll. To get this fixed, I really think the best scenario would be run the offense out of Gasol in the low post, have Taj start, who can hit a J consistently, and bring that big man outside. And then also then play, you know, Rose, a little bit of pick and roll there isn't bad either with Rose and Gasol. I think that works far more often than this pick and roll, which we've run over and over and over again with Rose and Noah. That just results in horrible play after horrible play.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, but if you're doing that, then Rose has to commit to going past that pick and taking a decent shot. I mean, one thing that's kind of standing out to me, Fred, is that right now in the league, the Bulls are 20th in the league in field goal percentage. I didn't know this. They're ninth in points per game, but they're 20th in field goal percentage. Of the teams below us, the only team that's a playoff team right now is Houston. They're 23rd. But besides that, every team that is below us
for
is
offensive
like the
field goal percentage?
Offensive field
goal
percentage.
Well, that's because of the precipitous decline in January. I mean, look at Noah.
Yeah, well, that's because we have a player on our team who is taking a quarter of the team's shots. We're averaging like 83 shots a game. Derrick Rose is taking – he's averaging over the last five games 24 shots, and he can't score. I mean, it's just unbelievable how many bad shots he takes. I mean, he's averaging 24 shots on 36% shooting over the last five games, and that's frankly an improvement over where he was, you know, a few weeks ago.
Great point, Mark. I mean, you brought this up, but that's one of the key. I didn't know they had fallen that far. That's amazing to me, because it was much higher in the beginning of January, you know, at the end of last year. Look at the top teams. There's a couple stats I always look at that always are pretty much conducive to this team is good or a playoff team. I'm going to name the top 10 in field goal percentage team-wise. Golden State, Clippers, Atlanta, Washington, Dallas, Milwaukee, Memphis, Phoenix, San Antonio, Toronto. That's top 10. All those teams are.
All playoff teams.
Playoff teams are either right on the cusp of that, right? The other
All of them are. Who's not a playoff team?
Phoenix is like 8 or
they
9.
They are.
Maybe they're 8 today. Three-point percentage is another one. I want to name the top for three-point. Golden State, Atlanta, Milwaukee, Washington, Clippers, San Antonio, Portland, Orlando, New York, surprisingly, and Dallas. Only two are Orlando and New York who are in the top 10 in three-point field goal percentage. The Bulls are right now falling fast. They're 12th. And that's only because Aaron Brooks. Without Aaron Brooks, who's top 10 in the league,
we'd be nothing.
I mean,
but and what about also look at the fact that in that what you just named for both of those, Milwaukee was in the top 10 of both of those. And what's incredible is that Milwaukee lost their quote unquote best player. I mean, he's a rookie, so who knows yet, but what looks to be their best player. And they're only three games behind us right now with very little talent. That team right now is pretty much as good as we are with way less talent. Because they're shooting the ball well. They're obviously taking good shots. And when you look at the two best teams in the NBA right now, Atlanta and Golden State, Golden State's shooting 48% a game. Atlanta's right behind them at 47. I mean, does Atlanta have a million star players like we have that can play in isolation and take guys off the dribble? No. But they play together, and they play in a fluid system offensively. We get into ruts where guys just start going one-on-one and, you know, over and over and over and over again. You know, Rose starts taking crappy shots. Jimmy gets put in bad positions. Nobody's trying to create for anyone on offense. So what blows me away is the statistic that we are 9th in points per game, but 20th in field goal percentage. If we brought up that field goal percentage a little bit, bring it up to 45, 46, if we got it up to 46%, we'd be in the top 8. If we got it up to 45, we'd go up about 5 spots. But say we brought that up 10% even, or, you know, point whatever, about 10%. So you brought it up there, not even 10%. You brought it up 5%. Think about how much better the team would be. We're 9th in field goals per game with the 20th most efficient offense. I think field goal percentage is the efficiency of the offense. We're 20th there, yet we're still scoring the ball extremely well. So that should tell you all that you need to know. Maybe defense shouldn't be the focus of it. I get it. We're more of an offensive team. But we're not an efficient offensive team right now. We can score, but not efficiently. So the focus has to start becoming on efficient scoring. You can't have Derrick Rose shooting 24 shots a game when he's not shooting the ball well. I get it. He's trying to work out the kinks, but this is not rehab therapy. This is not. At this point of the season, we're getting to the point where this team has to start getting into a flow, and they're not going to get into a flow if Rose is hogging the ball.
Right.
He should never be shooting out of the offense, and he should never, ever shoot a three.
No.
Where he is open, on the line, feet positioned, wide open. He'll get those. But when he's not positioned and he tries to jump into a three, he always misses them. But he does them time and time and time again. He's averaging 8 three-pointers a game over the last five games, shooting 17%, Fred. 17%! 8!
Well, hold on, Mark. The reason why is obviously they're giving him that shot, number one. I don't think
he
he's taking a bad shot on it. I think he's usually open when he takes it. Number two, there's no room to drive. The team is literally Noah's big man is always in the paint. You know, Gasol sometimes pulls a guy out, but the Bulls in general are not a good – there's no spacing anymore. You have nobody on the court who, when they're standing out on the perimeter, even Butler is not a great two-point shooter. Nobody is – everybody's a few feet closer to the rim. That is huge. Even a few feet in the NBA make all the difference in the world. That's why teams like Atlanta or that's why Korver in general has always been on winning teams. The minute he walks on into the court, he is such a good shooter. Somebody is within feet of where he's at. He automatically creates space and opens up the floor and makes it a 4-on-4 game, which is much easier to play than 5-on-5. The Bulls' spacing is horrific now. All you have to do is watch the game. I mean, you have big men everywhere. And if you play a team that's halfway decent defensively and has big guys, it doesn't matter even how good they are, that paint is going to be so packed, even Derrick Rose can't get to the rim. It's ridiculous to ask for him to get to the rim because there's nowhere to go. It's just, and so I know you're harping on this, and I understand the frustration with Derek. And then to a degree, I agree with you. I think he does need to, you know, maybe cut down on his outside field goal attempts. But I also understand his thinking. There's no room to drive. This is like 2010 all over again. I mean, when Heinrich's shooting this bad and he's playing these many minutes, he's literally shooting like 20% over the last seven games. Nobody guards him. I mean, I joke around. I honestly believe it. He's almost better off like punting the ball towards the rim. He is so horribly bad right now. He's not an NBA player. Not on that end. Maybe on defensively, but not on that end. You know, so I don't like it. I wish he would shoot better. I mean, his shooting. Look at his shooting numbers last like eight games, Mark.
How about five? 21%.
21%.
13% from three. Yet he's averaging almost six attempts a game. He played 31 minutes in the last game, 1 for 6. Again, this shows just the inconsistency of Thibodeau. 31 minutes against Houston, 11 minutes against Phoenix, the game before that, 4 days before that, 11 minutes against Phoenix. And yet he took almost the same amount of shots in 11 minutes. It's like Kirk Heinrich has to really blow. He was 1 for 4 in 11 minutes against Phoenix, and then they pulled him. He really has to screw up for Thibodeau to take him out of the game. And it's just, you're absolutely, dude. We have a player that is averaging 26 minutes a game over the last five games on our team, who is shooting 21%. Kirk Heinrich, last game against Houston, took 5 3-point attempts. He took 6 against Golden State. Do you want to know how many he made? 1 against Houston. He made 1 against Golden State. The only threes, so those are the only 2 threes in the last 5 games that he's made. 1 for 5 against Houston, 1 for 6 against Golden State. Those are the only 3s that he's made, and he's attempted... Oh, boy, I can't do math here. 15 threes. He's 2 for 15.
Yeah, it's a joke. And in the back of my mind, I have to say, and I really believe this now, I think this is some kind of silly game Tibbs is playing with guard packs for the reason why McDermott isn't shooting at playing. I mean, I heard Terry Borges on the radio say that, according to his source, and apparently he has a source within the Bulls, that McDermott plays fine in practice. And he was getting minutes before he was hurt. So all of a sudden now he doesn't play? He's healthy. Why is he not playing?
And we have holes on the team. We clearly have holes on the team.
We
need, especially his skills. If he could develop them, maybe this team could be a different team by the playoffs. But if he doesn't play, same with – and you're jerking around Mirotić so goddamn much too.
I know.
How do you expect this guy to have any confidence? He was playing well, but now he's all over the place. He played 12 minutes the last game, 8 before that, 12 before that, 31 against Golden State. And yet, you know, I mean, what does he need to do? He hasn't been shooting the ball particularly well, though he has been shooting the three well. He's shooting 41% over the last five, but he hasn't been shooting the rock extremely well. But
he doesn't have really any shots either. I mean, he's not getting any opportunities. It's just, and that's what
he took 8 shots in the last game. He took 7 against Miami. I mean, that's a lot.
Yeah, but not 3-point shots. Not 3-point shots.
No, he's taken at most 4 in a game. Golden State, Miami, he took 4. But look at those numbers, Fred. You generally, if you go with a player that's on a well-coached team normally, you're going to see a lot more consistency in their numbers across games. I mean, pick a player on Golden State that's around his caliber. You know, pick a player on Atlanta. Like, yeah, just looking at Atlanta, let's see here. Bazemore, right? Bazemore is kind of like, you know, a fringe. He's a bench dude, right? Would you agree?
Yes.
Okay, let's just see. 24, 27, 30, 40, and okay, he played 14 before that, but who knows if that was because of something, but 40, 30, 27, and 24. So I know against Portland that he had a crazy game where he was doing really well, and there was an injury, so they played him 40 minutes that game, but his minutes are all within 3 minutes of each other the last three games. And I bet you just pick a player on Golden State. Give me a player on Golden State that's kind of like that to us. Who would I pick?
I don't know, but it's not really a fair comparison because Golden State and Atlanta have so many blowout wins. You know, and you're going to get those guys are going to have more minutes. I don't know. I just feel like, though, there's no doubt. I mean, he should be getting some time. When you have Dunleavy out for an extended period of time and you have a guy in McDermott who should be a poor man's Dunleavy, you know, at least, right? I mean, and you have such a need or thirst for shooting. And that's a skill that doesn't just leave you. He was one of the best shooters in college basketball last year, and suddenly he's not. I mean, come on, dude. Get him in the stinking game and give him a run, even if it's for 5 minutes. Another thing is with Snell. I'm not a Snell fan. I think he sucks. But he goes from starting to not playing at all, like, overnight.
Yeah, constantly, right? Fred, how can we say right now that so much of what's going on is not coaching, even Rose's decision making, because we're going to let Heinrich and Rose shoot the, you know, just keep shooting the rock poorly, and we're not going to give them any strife for that. Yet the minute Mirochik does something, you know, McDermott can't even see the freaking floor. And Snell, you know, like guys that you're trying to develop, you keep doing these inconsistent things with them. You're never going to find consistency in your offense. I just went down the entire Golden State roster, Fred, and every single player, other than maybe in like one occasion here or there, every single player was within about 3 minutes of each other every single game. Well, and the same thing with Atlanta, because that's good coaching. Players have roles, and things change. There's situational things where games change. But as a whole, you play them at specific roles. They know when they're coming in the game. They know when they're coming out. And this way, you're messing with players' heads by constantly changing who's starting and how many minutes you get. You can't go from starting to getting a DNP.
That's a great point, Mark. In fact, just to bolster this point, David Hall had a fantastic audit. David Hall is a writer for the Tribune. I encourage everybody. I tweeted this out yesterday.
Yeah, it's a good article.
Look down my line, and I'm going to read you a paragraph that he had in there about Mirotic. And here we go. Quote, unquote, take Nikola Mirotic, the rookie who has worn off the hinges on the door to Thibodeau's doghouse. In a six-game stretch since January 23rd, Mirotic played as few as 2 minutes against the Mavericks and as many as 31 two games later. He scored 12 points against the Warriors, yet played just 12 minutes the next night. A young player relies on confidence, cannot establish continuity, consistently uncertain of his status. Mirotic speaks three languages but still is learning Thibodeau. Amen, 100%, end quote. Amen, 100%, right on. Great job, David Haw. And he basically is, the article is just basically saying Thibodeau needs to do a little bit better job too. Another good point I did want to bring up in here is, you know, Jeff Van Gundy with that embarrassing rant a few weeks ago against Bulls management on national TV. Of course those guys are angry at Thibodeau. I would be too, because they know he's good friends with him, and they know he's going to him complaining about, you know, hey, how meddling they are with the minutes and management and practice, you know, restrictions. So I would be upset, you know, based on hearing some jackass like Jeff Van Gundy when talking about something he knows nothing about. And here's a great quote from David Haw talking about this. As an aside, here, quote unquote, please explain how dysfunction between Bulls coach Phil Jackson and general manager Jerry Krause 17 years ago relates to how Bulls executives John Paxson and Gar Forman treat Thibodeau now. ESPN analyst and Thibodeau ally Jeff Van Gundy tried connecting the dots January 23rd, but fell short, reaching into the 1990s to oversell his point. Van Gundy accused the Bulls of historically undermining head coaches, referencing Jackson, Vinny Del Negro, an overmatched coach who required oversight, and Scott Skiles, the most apt comparison. A man of edicts, Thibodeau should have told Van Gundy post-game to stop using the microphone to whine about the plight of a guy making $5 million a year in a world-class city to coach four All-Stars. It undermines Thibodeau's efforts to create a positive working environment conducive to winning. End quote. Fantastic paragraph. Mm-hmm. I couldn't have written anything better. It's perfect. I mean, that's exactly right. 100% right on. Amen. And home run from David Haw. I couldn't put anything better than that. I mean, it says it all. That's all my issues with Thibodeau. I mean, there's so many right now. You know, but, you know, that said, don't fire him. Let's see where this goes. I still think we could turn this around.
Thank God for that article, though, Fred, because at least you see that somebody in the media is seeing what we're seeing. Because I feel, again, like this is almost like 2007 all over again. It's like Gar Pax is like our Ben Gordon, and Thibodeau's like Kirk Heinrich. It's like he's untouchable. No matter how crappy he gets, the fans just love him. And they think, well, he won Coach of the Year 4 seasons ago. And, I mean, this team, this scrappy team of, you know, Derrick Roseless guys went out there and competed the last 2 years. Look, you've got four All-Stars right now. You've got a very good team, and they're falling apart. And we can see holes in this team throughout the rest of his tenure as well in the ways that he managed his team. But it was tough to second-guess it because the team was succeeding. But at what cost? Because when the playoffs came around, we sucked. We way underperformed in the last playoffs. I'm not going to say we didn't 2 years ago. We probably overperformed 2 years ago, but last year we underperformed. And, you know, even against – I mean, it's tough to say the ACL year because obviously, you know, Noah got injured the game after that. But, you know, I don't think that it's a coincidence that we have seen, you know, when we had Luol Deng, that Luol Deng was getting worse every single time he made the playoffs because he played 40 freaking minutes a game. He was worse. Butler last year in the playoffs wasn't very good. We'll see how he is as the season goes on. But right now we're seeing a dip in Butler's production. Could that be because of all of the minutes, or could it be because of something else? It could maybe be because of something else. But we've seen consistent trends at players at that position who play 40 minutes a game. I'm done constantly giving Thibodeau praise. At this point, he's any coach to me. He's any coach to me because you got a good team here. And if you can't do anything with this, he's certainly not untouchable. He's got to be the first to go. Secondly, you're reading now a lot of rumors about Taj Gibson being on the trading block. Absolutely, 100%. Right now, this team's not playing good defense at all. We're a better offensive team than we are a defensive team right now, and we already brought up the stat of field goal percentage that we are so sorely lacking in, and three-point percentage that we are so sorely lacking in. I get what Taj means to us. He's not a nobody player. I'm not trying to put the bullet on him and saying that he's the reason that we're bad. However, Taj Gibson has the most value of any asset that we probably have. Probably. I would say he probably even has more value than Noah. Maybe not. Yeah, but because of the contract.
No,
Taj
no,
really
no.
Good contract.
Mirotić has more value than any. I'd say Mirotić probably has more value than any player that we have.
I don't know, because he hasn't shown anything yet. I mean, I don't know. I mean, even so, Taj, he definitely has some value. I think that you could we have a lot of players in that front court. We need to spread the floor. I do think that you could trade Taj for decent players that can spread the offense a little bit. You need more wing help. Kirk Heinrich cannot be playing 25 minutes on this team. He cannot be. His minutes have to be taken away from him because he's not good enough for those minutes. We can make the argument that with Rose shooting as crappy as he is, there's some light at the end of the tunnel because Rose is going to find, you know, Stella's going to get her groove back and all of a sudden he's going to be the player that he once was. I don't see that happening, but maybe. But with Heinrich, there is no excuse why this guy should be playing 24, 25 minutes a night. There's no reason. We have to replace him. He cannot play. We need somebody else. And you see that there is no depth behind Dunleavy in the wing spot. We need more wing. And I agree with what we got right now, McDermott, there's no reason why he shouldn't be playing. It's just mind-boggling that he's not getting a chance to prove himself. But if you're not going to play McDermott, or even if McDermott's not where you think he needs to be yet, you got to get wing help. This is a problem this team has always had, man. They've never been able to spread the floor. We bring in some offensive help, but we really didn't bring in much. We brought in another point guard that could shoot. You know, Aaron Brooks, all of our point guards the last 2 years were able to shoot the three. So, I mean, Brooks, I think, is a little more consistent at it. That's great, but not that different. You know, we really didn't do anything to improve one of the worst parts of this team. And it's like Derrick Rose has taken it upon himself to make this team, to change all that. And he's not that kind of a player. We need the right personnel on this team. We currently don't have it right now. And I don't know if we have the right coach. I don't know if we have the right coach.
I've been critical of Thibodeau, but I'm not willing to go that far. He's a great coach. There's no denying it when it comes to X's and O's. He's a great coach. The issues I have, minutes, playing time, I mean, these are important, but I'm not willing to give up
part
on
of coaching.
Him. Yeah, I'm not willing,
part of coaching.
That's true, but I'm not willing to give up on him yet until this season's over. Let's see where we go. If we go anywhere, ECF is absolutely something we need to do. And I don't agree we should be trading anybody. I want to run it. Let's finish this run as is. Let's just finish
but
for, it as
we
is.
Have holes on this team that we see right now. Why would you not want to get rid of somebody in that front court? Even if it's Mirotić, for the love of God, the fact is that this team...
you can't, Mark, you can't, because these guys, you have too much injury risk in this front court. All three of these guys get hurt. And one guy goes down and you make a trade, you know, for another guy, then you're done. One guy goes down, we still got a chance. If any one of those three goes down, we still have a chance to get to the
ECF.
Yeah, but
I don't know if we have a chance unless things really turn, Fred. It doesn't scare you that Cleveland is on a 12-game winning streak right now?
It does. That's the one team that scares me the most. 12-game winning streak, I think, and I just mentioned this with Brian, I think, you know, getting Mozgov, they had a huge hole there, and getting him, he just filled it. I mean, he's been a great rim protector. He's been a huge pickup for them. He's done everything he needed as far as cleaning up that mess. And now, you know, LeBron, who's the best player in the NBA, it's scary. It really is. And they're starting to gel. I mean, you can't do better besides, you know, I think what Atlanta had 18 in a row, but it's entirely possible they'd be dead out soon the way they're going. I mean, I watched them against the Clippers. They just destroyed them.
Wasn't it like a 30-point game in the first quarter?
That's the thing. They've been destroying teams. I know LeBron set out and Irving had 50 plus and, you know, barely won that game. But when he's been healthy and he's been playing LeBron since he had the sabbatical, three-week sabbatical, I mean, they're destroying teams. They destroyed us. Good teams. So you know, I think that's the team right now. I know Atlanta's good and all that, but it's Cleveland if who's going to be our challenge.
Not really. Who have they destroyed? So in this winning streak, the only good teams they've even played were the Clippers, us. Yeah, but we suck. Like right now, we're not a good team. Not right now. The Clippers, us, OKC, maybe? I mean, they're not that good.
Of course Portland, they are.
They beat Portland by 5. Well, they only beat Oklahoma City by 10. I mean, the last couple blowouts they had.
You just named all good teams.
But they didn't blow those teams out, Fred.
Okay.
They beat Los Angeles by 4.
They beat the 76ers and
Timberwolves. Yesterday they did.
All right, those teams sucked. The Kings, they beat pretty convincingly. Trailblazers are a good team. They beat them. The Pistons have been playing better. They beat them. They beat the Thunder.
But they didn't crush them.
They destroyed the Hornets, you know, who's on the edge and periphery of the playoffs. Just killed them. I mean, I think they won, was it like 129? They won like by 30 to 40 points. They beat the Jazz, and they beat the Bulls. I mean, so I think that's pretty much it in the last – can't recall who they played before that.
Look at this, though. This team had injuries.
But,
an injury that looked like they were going to fall apart. Like, I had no confidence. When they rebuilt and they got the – when they made the trade and they got Mozgov, those are great moves. And what I love about those Cleveland moves, first of all, you were able to get available players not using a whole lot. Like, this team got better after Varejao without – I mean, that's very tough to do because you're making trades. You've lost an asset, and then you're using other assets to acquire more, and they're able to get players that fit the system. And by doing that, you know, you found a good guy in Mozgov who was, you know, buried on Denver, who you knew if he was given the opportunity to be a good player. And I really love the Shumpert-Smith move because – we've seen what J.R. Smith can do. J.R. Smith was in a really bad situation. People hate on him, but people used to hate on Jamal Crawford too. And I'm not saying Smith is Crawford, but Smith is pretty damn good. And, he certainly, that team is a much bigger offensive threat now that they have him. I mean, because that just gives you so many options that you could be for who you can go to. And that's a team that saw what they had, and they made the adjustments to make themselves competitive based on what was occurring with the team. Whereas you see us right now, I'd like to see us do something similar. This team had to get more scoring at the wing and a front court player, and they did that. And all we really need is more scoring at the wing and Kirk Heinrich to never play again. We can do that.
Well, if you look at the schedule, if you look at the Cleveland schedule, they got the Pacers next. That's a win. They got the Lakers at home. That's a win. They got the Heat at home. That's probably a win. Then they play the Bulls at Chicago, where we're 13-11. That could be a win. They got the Wizards at Wizards, and Wizards have taken a little bit of a downturn lately. Then they got the Knicks and Pistons until they play the Warriors. They could win, let's see, they're at 12 right now, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. They could win 19 in a row, and then probably the Warriors are going to be a tough one. But, you know, if they get by the Bulls and Wizards. I'd like to believe that one of those two teams could beat them. I'm not sure it's going to happen. Otherwise, they're going to win 19 in a row, you know, unless the Bulls
for
Wizards
sure
can take them out.
And at least for us, we have a pretty easy schedule coming up. I mean, New Orleans is a pretty good team, and Cleveland, like you mentioned. But besides that, this is February. Orlando, Sacramento, Detroit, Phoenix, they're okay.
Yeah,
Milwaukee.
Let's look at what we got coming forward. The Raptors,
Charlotte, Minnesota. We should have February.
Tomorrow we got the Pelicans. You know, we're playing there. Good team. You know, on the edge of – we're going to have problems with those guys, let's be honest. So there's a good chance we could lose that one. Then we play at Orlando. I'd like to think we could win that. Kings at home, Cavs at home, at Pistons, Suns at home, Bucks at home, Hornets at home, Timberwolves at home. We got a lot of winnable games coming up, man. Should hopefully go in the next 10, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Next 9 games, I'd like to see us go 6-3 or 7-2.
We need it.
Yep.
We need. I mean, right now we say that, you know, Milwaukee's crawling up on us, but we're only, I think, 3.5 games behind.
Out of the two spot.
We're right. I mean, like, everybody's close besides Atlanta right now. So, I mean, you're right there, but I don't see Cleveland starting to hit their stride.
Toronto's
so
falling apart. You know, I mean.
Toronto's falling apart, so that's good. They're out. But, you know, Cleveland's starting to hit their stride, and that's who we really worried about anyway. The fact is that when we started the season, we thought it was a two-horse race, us and Cleveland, and at least now Atlanta is a serious contender, and I think Washington's pretty damn good too. So regardless of which, it's going to be worse than we thought originally, and right now the team is playing dreadfully. So let's hope that we can turn it around. This sucks.
Yeah. I agree, my man. Hey, I got to hit the road.
All righty, Fred. Well, good times as always, and until next time, if it ain't bold.
Yeah, thanks, come on.
All right.
Peace.
Only the bulls. Only the bulls.
make you want to fan up. If you a fan, that should make you want to stand up. If you already standing, put your hands up. Real high man, try and touch the banners. It's the home of the champions. Hard work can turn a home to a mansion. Need you to put your hands up, cause they don't know we gotta make them understand us. From the flow seats to the nosebleeds, from the young ones to the OGs, from the Bob Loves to the Rosés, and from the MJs to the Joe Kings. See the statue outside, high flow team. Take a picture, this is a city full of winners. You ain't got horns, you better dress warm. It really get chilly in the city in the winter. Let's go. '93, '96, '98, and that white we at home, and that red we away. Got my jersey, my Jordans, I'm ready to play. I bring the horns in, representing for the city I was born in. From the go, so you know that we be going in. Swear to God that I think we about to score again. And we got that rate, we got that file, and we got that freight. They got that style, but we got that state. So we shut that down, cause we got that date. Never let my city down, man. I put that on red cup. Every dunk should make the cover of a magazine. Feeling flyer than Benny on a trampoline.